Ah, mmm. The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.
From Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to the Potterverse. It's a podcast dedicated to the book and film universe of Harry Potter. So grab your favorite wands and time turners. Let's step into the night and pursue that flighty temptress adventure. And welcome back. My name is Mary Larson.
My name is Blake, and I don't know if I would be comfortable going to the bathroom in the prefect's bathroom.
Why?
Well, I mean, the bathroom, going to the bathroom, maybe, but taking a bath in that bathroom.
A little tubby time.
It ain't even a bath. It's a pool.
It is a pool.
It's a little weird. I would feel a little exposed.
I know.
You know? Like, it. I know, it's one thing if, you know, you get a bunch of people together, things happen, I don't know, but I'm just saying, just in terms of just going alone and taking a bath in a pool, I would feel kind of funny.
Okay. Well, you know? I could appreciate that. I, however, would love it. The description of this made me think back to, remember when we were looking at different hospitals to give birth in?
Yes.
And we went to one of the hospitals and they have essentially like this mini pool that a laboring mother can get into, kind of wade around. And I was in awe. I'm like, this is the coolest thing. Like, I've seen tubs. I've seen soaker tubs.
Sure.
I've seen long tubs, like 8-foot tubs. I've never seen a pool tub. And that's all I kept envisioning. And I've also been in float tanks. So if you've never been in a float tank,
that's wild.
That's also what I was kind of envisioning, how I would feel if I was to take a tub inside this giant pool. Like thing. Well, here we are, of course, chapter 25, The Egg in the Eye. And while we're talking about all of this lovely bath time, I just figured we needed a bit of a quote talking about it. He could tell at once that they carried different sorts of bubble bath mixture with the water, though it wasn't bubble bath as Harry had ever experienced it. One tap gushed pink and blue bubbles the size of footballs. Another poured ice white foam, so thick that Harry thought it would have supported his weight if he cared to test it. A third sent heavily perfumed purple clouds hovering over the surface of the water. Harry amused himself for a while, turning the taps on and off, particularly enjoying the effects of one whose jet bounced off the surface of the water in large arcs. Then, when the deep pool was full of hot water, foam, and bubbles, which took a very short time considering its size, Harry turned off all the taps, pulled off his pajamas, slippers, and dressing gown, and slid into the water.
You know, this is when I think the author's real gift for prose comes into play here. I mean, you get a real sense of not only the bathroom, but the mechanics of the bathroom. Mm-hmm. What it would feel like to turn all the valves and to feel and smell and touch the bubbles and the texture of that mm-hmm. room. Mm-hmm. I just love the way that the author crafts this scene.
Agreed.
And then she eventually builds on this scene in a way that I thought was unexpected for me.
Yeah.
And we'll get there in a minute. But yeah, loved this part. Loved
that
part.
Super fun. And, you know, slightly different than the movies. Obviously, the movie had to cut things and change things a little bit. It was still a grand bathroom. But I agree with you. The description right there was so fun. So before we delve into the rest of this chapter, we want to thank you all for listening. Thank you all for those of you who have taken some time to leave us a written review.
Yes.
Inside Apple Podcasts. If you haven't yet, head on over there. Give us some 5 stars and a written review. They are each a little warm hug to Blake and I as we read them. So they really make us smile. And also we wanted to thank our friends at jointhenerdclan.com. If you are not yet a member there, and if we, through the Potterverse, have brought you some Lumos in the time of Nox, we highly, highly recommend that you go. It is the way to support Mary and Blake Media. This is what I essentially do. I work from home, and this really makes a big difference for this mom and pop shop podcast. Helps make it possible for us to keep it going. Helps with our fees and websites and all that kind of stuff. So for as little as $2 a month, you can really make a big impact at jointhenerdclan.com. We've got some fun extras that always happen there for our friends there, and we'd love to have you.
And consider, too, also that we have a multitude of other podcasts, including one that is happening right now as you listen to this, the newly reminted This Is Us 2. We are back, baby, and This Is Us season 6 has begun, and we're covering it. And if you love This Is Us, or if you have some friends that love This Is Us, make sure you join us, because it's a lot of fun. It actually contains my favorite segment in all of Mary and Blake Media. It's the in or out segment. And it's just such great conversation every single time. All right, Marvin, you ready to get into this chapter?
Of course I am.
Let's do it, shall we?
Yes.
I solemnly swear that I'm up to no good.
So to give you a basic recap of chapter 25 in the Goblet of Fire, the egg and the eye, Harry is working diligently and last minute to solve the clue behind this egg that he has for the Triwizard Tournament. He takes it to the prefix bathroom, has a lot of chats with Moaning Myrtle, which is kind of awkward. While he's leaving, he sees Barty Crouch on the Marauders map, just hanging out in Severus Snape's office. Luckily, Harry is underneath an invisibility cloak because Filch, Snape, and Mad-Eye Moody come on out to try to figure out what's going on. In the process, Mad-Eye Moody covers for Harry, but takes away the Marauders map.
Mm-hmm. Well, this, I gotta tell you, this chapter is a doozy. It's a short one, and it's something that I think we can cover relatively easily. By the way, for those of you listening right now or watching at this moment, I want to let you know that we do have a hard out today, so we probably will not be doing some listener feedback for today. Anybody that sent anything to us over these past number of weeks, if we haven't gotten to it yet, I promise we will. So just keep that in mind for today's episode as we have some things to do today that we need to get done. So anyway, yeah, this episode packs a punch in a short amount of time. And I kind of want to – I know we usually go how the chapter is written for the most part. I think I want to start with what impacted me the most.
Please.
And that is the confrontation between Snape and Moody.
Okay.
And how that all went down. I found that fascinating. I found it fascinating because there are just, again, as it relates to all things Moody in this book, there are just so many layers that are going on at the same time. I mean, we have someone who's playing Moody.
Faux Moody.
Trying to protect himself,
yes,
but also ingratiate himself to Harry, but also try to maintain the facade of Moody himself, and make sure that this is all like copacetic, man. We're moving on.
Mm-hmm.
I love this, and something that the author does is We again have another opportunity where the Marauder's map is in someone else's hands. We experienced this the very last book, as a matter of fact, with Lupin.
Mm-hmm.
But she ups the ante that much more with the fact that Harry hasn't wiped it yet. He has not cleared out the map. And because of that, there is so much more tension. There is so much more to worry about. Because Harry doesn't know that Moody is going to be cool with him having the Marauder's map.
Correct.
What did you think about that whole sequence? Did it stand out to you when you first read it? Do you remember reading that at all?
I'll tell you this. I believe it would have stood out to me when I read it, as it was so long ago. Because I read this when it came out.
Yeah.
I read this when it came out.
You should be able to find it in the first page.
I should be able to. Yes, I should. But I do remember loving this book tremendously. And
what is this, 02?
2000, yes. So I would have read this when it came out.
Yep.
reading it again now and really being with Harry and understanding the weight of how important that Marauder's Map is to him.
Yeah.
And how the worst people like Filch and Snape are now here, both of whom who would love to get him in trouble, both of whom would love to get him expelled. You know, and Snape has already seen this parchment before.
Yeah.
So if Snape's now able to understand what it does, the amount of trouble he wants to get Harry into is unfathomable. And you know that he would never give it back to Harry. There's no way he would ever, ever, ever get it back. Mm-hmm. And Filch might even remember the parchment and say, hey, I thought I hid that a while ago.
Yeah.
That used to be in my office because Fred and George snuck it out of there.
Right.
That's where it's originally, you know, from. So yeah, Harry knows that both of these guys have seen this parchment before. They don't know how magical it is. And if either of them get their hands on it, he's never going to get it back.
And the other thing, too, that is kind of implicit in this text is that we get a sense that, you know, I think for the first time, really, that Snape was a Death Eater.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, because Fo-Moody is able to spin this yarn the way that he can, not only does it ingratiate himself to Harry, but we also start to put Snape in a little bit of more bad light. It starts pushing us in the direction that Snape is not trustworthy, no matter what. No matter how many times Snape has come to the rescue, no matter how many times Snape has bailed Harry out, you know, in his way,
yes,
he's a Death Eater. And now we got to start looking at him with some side eye.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the whole Karkaroff thing, all of these things are starting to build
to
on.
To really build, yes.
Yes. It's all building, and it all happens in this one interaction.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about the last chapter kind of being the moment, the pivot point. And this is the pivot going in a direction that allows it to spread,
mm-hmm.
you know, that allows it to get into a place where – yeah, we're now going to start chewing up some emotional and plot mechanics.
Yeah, I mean, because at this point, now we're starting to bring even more doubt to Snape. We're starting to highlight him as a potential person who put Harry's name into the Goblet of Fire. And with Sirius's help, you know, Harry knows he needs to really pay attention to each one of these clues. Sirius has let Harry know there are dark Death Eaters.
Yeah.
You got to be careful with all of them. And it's also a big point where Moody really establishes Harry's trust now.
Yep.
You know, like he could have outed Harry. He could have reprimanded Harry for having that parchment. You know, makes a big deal like, oh, can I borrow this? You know, being kind of nice about it. And also, when you really think about it, so it's Fo-Moody.
Yeah.
It's Barty Crouch Jr.
Yep.
Who is a Death Eater.
Yep.
Who is also mad at Severus Snape.
Yep.
For being a double crosser to the dark people, you know what I mean? To the dark arts,
to the Death Eaters,
the Death Yankee. I'm like, what am I trying to say?
Yeah, you got like the Doc Ma caboose. That's a good This Is Us reference. Good job.
Thank you. You know, to the Death Eaters, you know, a double crosser, and oh yeah, you know, Dumbledore, for him to say, you know, Dumbledore wants me to check up on you.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And just to kind of he's just sticking it to Snape, knowing that if he was in Snape's position as a former Death Eater, you know, what would rile him up? What would put fear in him? What would bother him? And it's crazy because not only is he doing this, and he's actually Barty Crouch Jr., but Snape's whole commotion was because of Fo-Moody.
Right.
Trying to get, you know, and succeeding and getting Polyjuice Potion ingredients out of his stores.
Yeah.
So this became a beautiful excuse for him.
Yep.
You know, because he was just stumbling around. He could have easily have gotten caught. Instead, you know, there's this egg, you know, it must have been Peeves, and there must have been all these other elements going on. So he gets kind of off the trail. And mind you, he is able to tell Snape, I am allowed to do anything I want.
Yeah.
I am allowed to snoop on you. But it's just, it was very fortunate for Fo-Moody.
Yeah, and you think also too, and yeah, I want to kind of build on that point you said. Fo-Moody. Thank you. He says, Dumbledore gave me permission to keep an eye on you.
Yep.
Like, and I know you've already said something like that, but he gave me specific permission.
Like, you think you're close with Dumbledore?
You got nothing, buddy.
Yeah, I'm even closer.
You're a jabroni in comparison to me. You might as well just go back to get
your
shine
JV,
box.
I'm varsity.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So because of that, I think you're right. Fo-Moody knows exactly what will needle Snape that much more. And another thing you think of too, knowing what we know, obviously, that this is Fo Moody, and how when you, if you go for, if you're reading it in the first time and you're like, oh, well, Moody's just protecting,
you
don't know. But then you look back at this moment and you think about how close.
Yes.
Like a millimeter away, this guy was from just getting totally sold out.
And Snape would have put two and two together when he saw what ingredients were being made. He wouldn't know it was Barty Crouch Jr. necessarily, but once he saw what was missing and who was in that room, he would know Moody's making Polyjuice potion.
Yeah, but if Snape looked at that map and he happened to see himself, he's going to see Barty Crouch Jr. right in front of him.
Yes.
That's the thing. That guy was, I mean, a cat's hair away from just buying it. And ultimately, that adds a whole other layer to the tension that's involved that the author writes here. And, you know, the author, I think, gets herself in a little bit of trouble. I think narrative trouble in that she did, in fact, create the Marauders map. You know, she has to. I would have to imagine that is probably the most troublesome, like, magical artifact.
You think
that
it's more troublesome than the Time Turner?
Well, that's a good conversation, and I would like to have that conversation with you. If you had to make that choice, which is more troublesome?
And
what I mean by troublesome in terms of the author is, okay, how do I work my way around this? Because the Time Turner is always going to be the answer. Well, yeah, sure. I mean, okay, Voldemort comes to power. Let's just turn it back a few times and maybe get to that 1 second where he recognizes this thing that gets him to power. I know he can only go back so far and there's a danger to it, but there would be some people that would probably be willing to take that danger. And the other one is this. It's the Marauder's Map. Knowing where everybody is at all times with their true identity. And that plays specifically to this book because we have Barty Crouch Jr. walking around.
I mean, it also plays when it was Peter Pettigrew.
Sure.
Okay.
But that isn't discovered until later on in the book. So that's an easy out. It's just like, okay, I see this for the first time. I'm going to go take a look.
Yes.
This, however, takes place in almost the smack dab of this middle of this book.
So you're faulting Harry for not seeing Barty Crouch's name previously?
No, I think what I'm asking is which is more troublesome, the Time Turner or this map?
Time Turner. Because the map, Time Turners are like a ministry thing. This map has been in the hands of like 14-year-olds.
Sure.
Who occasionally use it and like for their own teenager needs.
I think you're probably right. The Time Turner is probably the most troublesome.
Lupin is able to say, if this gets in the wrong hands, it's very bad. So now it is in the wrong hands.
Yeah, right.
I think the Time Turner is a bigger deal.
The one thing I would say that I would argue with you about this is this. I think for this book, obviously, the most troublesome artifact would be this Marauder's map. And number one, why hasn't Harry looked at the map before this?
Because Harry doesn't look in the map frequently right now.
I know, but you got to figure, like, he's probably spying on Cho Chang a little bit.
No.
I think so.
I don't think so.
You never wanted to know where your school crush was, what he was doing, what if he was out with another girl.
No, I think it's hurting his feelings because she's probably always with Cedric. And that being said, yeah, maybe that's what he does look at. Maybe he looks just at Cho. You know, once again, we have to remember the mindset of 14-year-olds. And for my teenage friends listening, this is, please, 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 no offense. But like frequently it is. It's this like really heavily tunneled vision.
Yeah.
And so he's not wondering who's in Mad-Eye Moody's office. You know, and truth be told, Mad-Eye Moody is in his office. So if he did ever do a quick peruse, you would see, because Moody's in the trunk in his office.
Yeah, but that means Moody never leaves.
Yeah, but Harry, I'm telling you, this thing stays in Harry's trunk with his invisibility cloak. He's not using this a lot. He's busy. His mind is busy with girls. His mind is busy with figuring out this egg.
Sure.
You know.
Fair enough. I think you kind of have to whistle past the graveyard a little bit when it comes to this. A little bit. The thing that I don't think
he's that nosy. I don't know,
because like, let's say for the sake of argument, he wants to get Neville's help, right? He wants to get Neville's help because of whatever, or he wants to find Hermione. He doesn't know where she is. Like, you never had that point in college when you're like, oh man, I got to find X, Y, and Z person.
Yeah, he can't just whip it out whenever he wants because, Blake, calm yourself. You know, even if he does it inside his bedroom, he sleeps in a bedroom that also has Seamus, Dean, and Neville in it. So yeah, he has to carefully hide the fact when he opens this thing.
Fair
so
enough.
It's not like his iPhone that he can just have, you know, in the common room yeah, at the Great Hall. Like, this is a thing that has to be very private.
Yep.
So
the last thing I would say then is it is very writerly inconvenient.
Okay.
That even... Okay, even if we do whistle past the graveyard about the conversation we were just having, okay? All things being equal, the fact of the matter is the Marauder's map doesn't delineate the difference between Body Crouch Senior and Body Crouch Junior. And that, to me, is a little bit of a narrative fault. And that's one of those things where the story needs it to be that so that the story can continue. Because if Snape discovers the fact that, oh my God, this is Body Crouch, book's over. That's it. That's the end.
Correct.
Same thing, I think, too, with...
So you're upset that in the Marauder's map, it doesn't have people's, like, last... What is that?
Like a suffix or whatever yeah, it is. Yeah. Yeah. Really? I'm a little upset with that.
Blake, that's extra, okay? You know, when he went to school, he didn't be like, my name is Barty Crouch Jr. Like, if someone is a junior, they don't say that as an adult all the time.
I disagree.
I think that's a thing. Third or whatever. I don't know. I think it's fine. There's only so much room on the map.
And there's plenty of room on that map.
And then it had to be like a third line.
That map's enormous. They're not saving code. They're not saving, you know, kilobytes of information.
You only have 120 characters.
Yeah. This isn't Twitter. I don't know. I find that regardless of all of that, it is a troublesome magical artifact.
I think it's fine that there is no junior.
But either way, I like how no matter what, there are adults still just straight up lying to Harry, like constantly. And that kind of fuels this whole, I don't really trust adults all that much.
Yeah.
Like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't know. I just find that awesome. Like, I find that awesome and I find it terrible at the same time. It's like, poor Harry. Mm-hmm. Poor Harry is just getting everybody just on him. And the fact that a Death Eater who's supposed to be an Auror but is afraid of Auror, well, not afraid, but just runs away from Auror, suggests that Harry become an Auror. It's wild.
I mean, Barty Crouch Jr. is tapped. I agree with you. For him to lean into that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's also funny to him because he's talking about Harry's future, knowing Harry's going to be murdered soon.
Yep.
So, you know what you should be one day when you grow up?
Well, it's kind of like one of those things. Like, it reminds me of the movie Heat. You ever see?
No.
Did it ever make you watch Heat?
No.
Oh, it's so great, man. Al Pacino, Robert De Niro. It doesn't matter. But it's like when, you know, Robert De Niro is this criminal and Al Pacino is the cop that's trying to find him.
Okay.
And they have this kind of kinship almost. Mm-hmm. And there's this great like movie history scene between the two of them. It's like the first scene that they ever share together in film ever, you know? And it's this, Pacino's been chasing De Niro and it's been this whole thing. It's in the middle of the movie. It's the climax. And you would think that Pacino goes after him and like cuffs him and I found you. You're it. Like, that's it. You're out. No, they sit down and they have dinner at a diner and they tell each other, like, when it comes time, I'm going to put you down and okay, I want you to know that. And there's almost like this kinship between the two because they're opposites. And I wonder if Fo Moody kind of has this little bit of kinship feel with Harry and like auras in general because they've just been at odds so much. So he sees this in Harry with the attention to detail. And he's like, you know, you'd be pretty good at that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I can definitely appreciate that. And I think that Barty Crouch Jr. is one of the most brilliant Death Eaters, if not the most brilliant Death Eater, because I think he also knows that Harry, being a Gryffindor, mm-hmm, would like a little praise and would like a little, accolades of, you know, this is something you are good at. I'm recognizing you for this, you know? So, I don't know. He knows, of course, Harry doesn't have a parental figure. So for him to kind of give this is going to once again add to that trust pile. You know, I had a friend who was very manipulative. She Who Must Not Be Named is what we used to nickname her.
That's correct.
And I had a job while she and I were friends, and I had a boss who was very difficult at the time. And I was telling her, I said, you know, oh my gosh, I just can't connect with this boss, and you know, she's undermining me, and I just can't get ahead. And this friend said, let's go on her Facebook and see what things she's interested in, see what she cares about, see what she, you know, talks about in life. And she found out that this boss had a dog, and she would occasionally show pictures of this little dog. And She Who Must Not Be Named told me, you need to ask her about her dog at least once a week.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't even like dogs. Sorry, dog friends. I'm just not a dog person.
Mary's out on dogs. I'm not
a
cat person.
I'm glad you all have dogs. I'm glad that they're here as a species. It's just not for me. So it's not, I'm not going to be like, oh, how is your dog? Did your dog get a Christmas chew toy? Like, do you go to this dog park? It's not in me to do it.
Sure.
And this friend told me, she's like, you start asking her about her dog, you're going to see a different side of her. I did. And it worked.
Yeah.
And then I felt really weird, because
you were asking about a dog that you just don't care about.
But this person had that knowledge. It wasn't me. It was the She Who Must Not Be Named.
Yep. Now, I understand.
It was the Slytherin influence. But that's what I'm saying, is that when I see Faux Moody, aka Barty Crouch Jr., doing this, I think it's actually him on a brilliant level, knowing what it is that Harry wants to hear, knowing what it is that Harry needs to hear, because he doesn't have this kind of a person in his life. The closest person right now is Professor McGonagall, but she's kind of cold, you know, and here he is covering for his secrets, you know, doing all this kind of stuff that he doesn't have. You know, the other closest thing is Sirius, but Sirius, communicate with an owl. Yeah. It's hard. So,
and he ain't that close with Dumbledore yet. So like, you can't rely on that. So it's, you know, it is, I mean, it is what it is.
Yes. It's very, very smart.
So let's, I mean, I think we've discussed this now pretty well. Unless you had anything else to share about the confrontation or anything else after that.
No.
Of course, I mean, Harry does get himself into trouble by going to seek out Barty Crouch and like figuring out like, hey, what's Barty Crouch doing here? And, you know, obviously we know the fact that he's over there in Snape's closet stealing the stuff for Polyjuice Potion so he can keep being Mad-Eye Moody.
Correct.
Okay, great.
Tubby time talk.
Now, tubby time. I'm a little creeped out by Tubby Time.
Yeah, Moaning Myrtle.
Moaning Myrtle is a little bit of a perv. Little pervy for me. Little pervy for my taste. Yep.
I mean, if you get flushed down the pooper on a regular basis, you may be a little odd too. You know, it's so interesting to think about these ghosts and, you know, how ghosts maneuver. And you learn about Moaning Myrtle and how she actually used to haunt someone. And the ministry had to get involved.
Yeah.
Because she was that scary of a stalking ghost. So, you know, just more insight into like, this girl is not mentally okay, but she does still have a soft spot for Harry. And she, you haven't really seen Moaning Myrtle since Chamber of Secrets, since book two. So it's nice just to kind of have this other character brought on in, but she is a creeper. And okay, is it made clear? This is just the prefix bathroom, right? Prefix.
Yes, it's the prefix bathroom.
Is it the boys' prefix bathroom?
Well, that's a great question, because it doesn't, there's no textual evidence to suggest that it's either boys or girls. Is it a co-ed bathroom?
That's how I read it, was it's a co-ed bathroom with this giant tubby. Like, what goes on with the prefix?
Right. And how many prefects are there? Like,
there's two for each house, I think.
And for each grade?
No.
Oh, so just two for each house.
Yes. So Ron and Hermione become prefects next year. Right. And Draco becomes a prefect next year.
Right, so you're talking about a total of eight people.
Yes.
And then, isn't it, like, don't the Quidditch captains get to use this bathroom too?
They get, yeah, they get, like, extra.
Or something like
they
that?
Get, I think they, it's something about, they get, yeah, they get some kind of a perk. So he will have a little perk and eventually, but.
Maybe it is a unisex bathroom.
I think it is. And maybe because it's a pool-sized tub, maybe they just treat it like a pool.
Well, maybe, because of the fact that there is a pool-sized tub in this bathroom, that means inherently that this bathroom is enormous.
Yes.
And if it's that big, I think you could probably get away with it being a unisex tub, with the fact that there are so few people using it. So it's, since it's used so infrequently, the likelihood...
I'm just hoping, you know when you go to those bathrooms that are like public bathrooms and there's multiple stores, but there's still a lock on the main door?
Yeah.
I'm hoping that it's one of those.
Sure.
Because I agree with you. So either they treat it like a hot tub, and everyone just knows if you're going in the big tubby, you wear your bathing suit. Because
yes,
it's more of a hot tub thing. Okay? It's not like a tub thing where you're like washing your pits.
Right.
I mean, because the other thing, if it's that deep, that's a difficult tub. You know, if I'm trying to shave my legs, but yeah, my legs are fully underwater, not what I'm going for. Or if I'm just trying to have a relaxing tub, you know, but I have to keep worrying about treading water, not relaxing.
Yeah.
But if it's more of hot tub meet spring break foam party, oh, I'm here for it.
Yeah.
I'm here for it.
Let's have a few yeah, adult beverages.
No, they're 15.
Some butter beers. I'll bring the butter beers.
Okay. So anyway, so he's in this tub and Myrtle helps him kind of along to figure out.
And the author does make it a very specific point to show that there's nothing else showing from Harry other than just his head because of all the density
the bubbles.
Of the bubbles.
Yes.
Which I think is important for the fact that we do have younger readers and, you know, it is what it is. And where she does tend to steer
herself. I
would have
worn a bathing suit, though, still. Maybe he wore his undies. It didn't say he takes off his undies.
No,
it just says his pajamas, his slippers, you know, things like that.
The one thing I think from this entire endeavor that kind of comes jumping out at me is the last line in the mermaid's song, which is, "But past an hour, the prospect's black. Too late, it's gone. It won't come back." Now,
nice.
This is important because it's talking about something that is valuable to mm-hmm. the contestants. Mm-hmm. And that if you take an hour, it's going to be gone, which is different from the dragon and how that what that entailed. That just took...
That's your own life.
That just took bravery,
yes.
Right? That took the choice of saying, I'm going to survive.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is a far more, I would say, emotional task mm-hmm. where something that you love is going to go away.
Yes.
Yeah, you don't know what it is, but you can be sure that it's going to be something that you love.
Yeah.
Ultimately, it comes down to, do you think that it's like, okay, we now knowing that we know what gets stolen, okay,
it's people.
It's Ron, it's people.
Yeah.
Does that person die? Or do they, is it just that?
It's a fake out. Dumbledore wouldn't kill Hermione.
Yeah, but it's not up to Dumbledore. It's up to the mermaids.
He's one of
the mer people, whatever.
He's in charge of the mer people. No one would actually die. They want you to think they're going to die. They're not.
Yeah. I know, but, and I guess that's what lends to the conflict.
The kids are supposed to think they're going to die.
Yeah, yeah. But or whatever it is taken away forever, right? I think... You could probably logic yourself around it in that, okay, it gets taken away and it doesn't come back. Meaning like, okay, after an hour, this thing's gone. It won't come back for you.
And you can't earn the points.
Yeah, that's right. You
get a zero.
You could twist yourself into that pretzel.
Okay, I like that better.
So, all right. Anything else you want to talk about in this chapter?
I think we covered it. Creepy moaning Myrtle and the creepy eye and
all right. Well, we are at our hard out. So that also means, unfortunately, we can't do our different perspective today.
That's okay.
We will have it next episode.
Yes,
I promise. Mary will come back, and even maybe we'll do two different perspectives. I don't know. We'll see.
You can have one. I can have one. And they can talk.
Oh, let's do. Oh, love it.
Okay.
Love it.
Okay.
All right. Let's close this bad boy out.
As always, thank you, thank you, thank you for hanging out with us and talking about Potter and tubbies and all this kind of stuff. Did we make you smile at all? If so, do us a favor. If you haven't written a review in Apple Podcasts, can you do that for us today? It'll take 2 minutes of your time. 5 stars, write a little something. It goes a long way. And if you've already written a review, if you can actually screenshot your phone.
Yes.
And put that in your stories. Mm-hmm. You know, let people know, hey, I'm listening to one of my favorite Harry Potter podcasts. If you're on Instagram, you can tag us at Marianne Blake Media. You know, pop it on your Facebook wall. Let other friends know what you're listening to. If you're in a Facebook group with fellow Potterheads, you know, like let them know about it as well. Sharing is caring when it comes to podcasts, and the word of mouth really is what gets it done. So we appreciate you with your reviews and your shares.
And go to marianneblake.com. Check out all the podcasts that we got going on over there, including as we just just said earlier, our This Is Us podcast, so happy that it's back. So happy that we're covering it. It's like the best.
We love it. We love it. Well, we love you all. On that note, my name's Mary Larson.
My name is Blake.
Mischief Managed.